everybody. Welcome to the Large Nerdron Collider, the podcast that's all about the geeky things happening in the world around us and how very excited we are about them. I'm Ariel Kasten. I just had a slight brain glitch in the beginning of that. And with me, as always, is my wonderful friend and co-host, Jonathan Strickland.
I ate cashews just before going on microphone. I have made a mistake.
Do you need to cough?
Not yet, but I mean, it's just a matter of time. You know that thing where you'll eat something like that and you'll get like a crumb stuck in the back of your throat and then suddenly It's like, it's always at a moment when you absolutely should not cough. And so you try to hold it back, but this just makes it worse. That's
Listen,
going to happen.
I drank water before you hit record. And so now I need to burp, but that's okay. I also apparently have psychosomatic sympathy throat crumbs because
now
you said
cough.
That. Now I'm like,
well, I mean, if you do want to burp, just go ahead because I already have to edit a show that's done by a friend of the show, Shay Lee. And let me tell you about 15% of every recording she sends me are burps.
I love Shay and I don't
Very
understand
much.
That. Yeah. I don't understand that. Like
she says that she gets a little nervous when she's delivering on the microphone and she drinks water too to keep her voice going. And the combination of the two means that like I'll be in the middle of a section. I'm like, wow, she's really on a roll. This is a really good. And then it'd be blah. And then she's like, beep. And then she'll redo it.
I always know when a burp, this is just a me thing. This is no shade to Shay. I always know when a burp is coming. I would pause it for you, I think.
Yeah, it's fine. Like we haven't ever worked on things like her putting the recording on pause.
She just
the recording just goes the whole way. Like it might be a 30 minute episode, but a 50 minute long recording, because when you have all the pickups and everything, it stretches into that much. And she's a perfectionist too, so if she has a bit where maybe she thinks something was a little mush mouthed or she felt that the pacing was a little wrong, she will do another take of that segment. And she'll also go back even further so that she has the right tone, right? Instead of just picking up right where you messed up, which some people, that's how they do it. I've got coworkers who in the middle of a word will stumble and they'll just pick up at the beginning of the word. She likes to go back so that it's tonally consistent for that whole section, so that it's delivering the mood and feeling that she wants, which is really admirable. It does make editing a bit more work, but then you could argue it's worth it.
I mean, I get it too. I usually, when I'm editing my own, because I do get that way if I'm doing like an audiobook audition or a voiceover audition or whatever. For you, I just, if I end up sounding like I've done a whole bunch of mess ups and you're having to piece words together, I apologize. But I will go back and I'll do multiple takes and I just leave a really long space so I know where I messed up.
Yeah.
Because I don't like finding the beeps.
I get it. Yeah. For me, like beep is just how I've just gotten trained. Like I can even sometimes tell what word Shay says based upon the shape of the waveform because
neat.
I've gotten so used to editing. I'm like, oh, this is going to be, well, or something like that. I can tell just by the shape of the waveform.
That's really cool.
It's kind of fun, but it's also really useful when you're editing because sometimes it's not just one like goof, right? Sometimes you make a goof and then when you're doing the retake, you make a goof and maybe it's in a different place. Being able to recognize the words just based on the waveform makes editing so much faster because you can be like, oh, I need to skip ahead a couple of takes because, again, she just goes all the way through. She doesn't like if a take doesn't work out, it's not like she goes back in the actual audio file. It's part of the long audio file.
Now,
this is, again, not to cast shade on Shay. This is a perfectly cromulent way to record. She does a really good job. So Shay, when you do listen to this, this is not a criticism, okay?
No.
And she's probably about 5 or 6 episodes behind, so it'll be like 2 months and she's going to be like,
well,
I'm so sorry. I'm like, why are you apologizing?
If it makes you feel better when you listen to this, when I'll get like a 20-second voiceover audition and I'll be like, this will take me 10 minutes, right? Once I work, you always work an audition before you record it if you have the luxury of time to do that. Sometimes you get very fast turnarounds and you just have to like sight read, get context clues and go. But it'll take me like 4 hours to record that. So I have no place to judge anybody.
Well, and for those curious about the show we're talking about in this case, the podcast is called Coddy Womple with the Shadow People, which I think we've talked about on previous episodes. It's a narrative podcast set in a weird kind of fantasy world based upon around turn of the century, and I'm talking 20th century, Appalachia. And so really neat, very atmospheric, very much set in time and place, even though that time isn't well defined. Check it out if you're into kind of sort of fairy tale-ish spooky stuff.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. Also, we have a lot of fun things to talk about. So among the things that we have watched and listened to this week, Jonathan, you're giving me a look. Did I move on too quickly?
No, I thought you were skipping what we had watched this week. That's why I was giving you a look. And then you brought it back around and I realized I was being premature with my looks.
Oh, no, it's okay. Look, you guys, we basically talked a whole conversation that could have been a whole podcast on its own before we hit record about other less geeky, not really geeky things, just annoying things that we have to spend our time on. We'll spare you that. We did do some fun stuff. This week, I started watching Dragon Ball Z Kai. Maybe Dragon Ball Z. No, yeah, Dragon Ball Z Kai.
So had you ever watched any other version of Dragon Ball Z at all?
I have seen small little clips of it. I had never watched the series before. I was familiar enough with it. I had seen enough clips of it. And I think Kai is like the retelling or remastering of the story once Goku is an adult.
Oh, okay. So... Well, I know that there are a few anime series that have done things where it's been like kind of a retelling of stories. Like I know that Full Metal Alchemist did that, right? Like they had a secondary series come out that was essentially a retelling of the original series. But what are you thinking about it so far? What's your take?
So it's actually a recut version of the sequel series Dragon Ball Z, because Dragon Ball is the original series. Dragon Ball Z is the sequel when Goku's an adult. Dragon Ball Kai is a recut of it, which has like a new song and like a new the intro sequence you can tell is new because it's so much prettier. I am really torn. One, the animation style's all over the place, which I get is a stylistic thing, but sometimes it throws me. Mm-hmm. Some of the cartoon is like, there's one character that is very much like an ethnicity stereotype that I do not think is okay.
Gotcha.
And it's not like it's being as far as I've seen the one character, and apparently it shows up less and less throughout the series. It's not being played poorly, but it's very much like the cartoon drawing of this character is not what I consider okay.
Gotcha.
It's weird. It is. Some of it is very funny, and I know that they know it's funny. Like some of the jokes they make, like they know are funny, and a lot of it's just weird. But I'm kind of hate watching's not the right word.
We'll talk about that in a second.
Yeah, because I don't hate it. Like it's a morbid curiosity watch. I'm like, what in the? It's just so bizarre that it keeps my attention. I'm also rewatching Fallout. I think I told you guys that because my husband and I watched it, and then our friend group that does the group watch decided that 3, 2, 1, go. And everybody pressed start on the Amazon show at the same time worked well enough since Amazon stopped their group watch. We're second episode in on our second watch through. There's a lot of setup they do in the show that you don't catch the first time around. You won't catch the funny comments until you've already seen it and you know where it's going. And then you watch back and that comment's very funny. Also, there are moments that are like, I enjoyed the first time through. The second time through, I'm laughing my butt off, like unexpectedly laughing my butt off because the delivery is so much better the second time through.
Yeah, I remember when I watched the first episode, actually the first two episodes, that I felt that there wasn't quite enough humor in it to be a Fallout series, and that slowly improved over time. But maybe, as you say, part of that was my lack of perspective, and yes, that if upon a second watch, I would appreciate it more.
So cut out for about 30 seconds if you haven't seen the show and you don't want spoilers. I'll mention two things to you, Jonathan, because anybody else who hasn't rewatched it but has watched it will enjoy this. In the second episode, when she goes into the shop in Philly, and the shopkeeper mistakes her for like a trade-in, and she goes, you know, you're in good shape. You got all 10 fingers. That's much funnier this time around.
Sure.
And then when the scientist says, you have to cut my head off, like, the first time it was disturbing. The second time through, the melodrama in it is just hilarious. Because I know what to expect, so I'm no longer worrying about it.
There's still some big questions I have about the Enclave, which I hope will be visited in season two.
I'm sure. Anyhow, that's mainly what I've watched. It's been a busy, busy week. Yeah, I'm working on a bunch of other fun stuff like auditions and shows and things like that. So
it's been a pretty busy week for me too. I did, against my better judgment, watch only the first episode, but the first episode of Velma season two. Y'all know I watched all of the first season and hated myself and the series the entire time. So I watched the first episode of season two. I will say, I feel like it has eased off a little bit on the things that I hated about it, but not enough to make me want to continue with the show. Like, they're still making very obvious jokes, very obvious meta commentary, but not at the frequency that I think the first season did. So I use this example all the time where it's a, in my view, a sin, a storytelling sin to dwell too long on a joke or to call real attention to a joke, because a joke either works or it doesn't. It doesn't magically work if you just draw more attention to it. That does nothing.
It only does that if you're Flulaborg.
I the example I always give is in Robin Hood Men in Tights, where there's the joke about the reference to Blazing Saddles, and then after the joke is made, a character says, what, you never seen Blazing Saddles? Like, he's calling out the reference. And like, who's that for? Because if you know the reference, you got the joke. If you don't know the reference, then telling you that it's a reference doesn't make it funny. It doesn't work in either case. Velma season two has some jokes that feel like that to me, except it's all, again, meta commentary. Some of the jokes make no sense. Like, they're like, I'm just as likely to do that as a blah, blah, blah. And you sit there and think about it and like, blah, 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 doesn't even make sense. It doesn't apply to the situation at all. You're just saying it because here's something that listener or viewers will recognize as a reference, but it doesn't have relevance. And I'm like, you got to make it relevant for it to be a joke. Otherwise, what are you doing? Yeah. So yeah, I watched the one episode. They're leaning more heavily into mystery elements. And it didn't really do much for me. So who knows, but I don't think I'm going to go and watch a second episode. The other thing I did this week that was kind of geeky for kind of a subset of geeks is last night. First of all, it's amazing I still have a voice, but last night I went to a Me First and the Gimme Gimmes concert. So for any of y'all who don't know, Me First and the Gimme Gimmes is a super group. It's made up of members of other bands, and they play covers. All they do are covers, and they do them in a kind of a punk power pop style. So things like, they did a cover of Jolene by Dolly Parton. They did a cover of Country Roads by John Denver. They did a cover of Don't Cry for Me, Argentina. They did a cover of Rocket Man. They did all these great covers, and I've been following their music for a couple of decades now. Mm-hmm. I'd never seen them live. And the really fun thing is that it's not just a music show when you go see them perform. They put on a kind of theatrical performance where there's a drama that plays out as you're watching, because the lead singer ends up having a feud with other members of his band, where he'll do things like turn to the bass player and like, could you tell the drummer to stop rushing? We're not talking anymore. So I need you to tell the drummer that he needs to stop rushing his intros and playing over my introductions of these songs.
I love that.
And eventually got to a point where he turns to the rhythm guitarist and says, could you tell the audience that they're not holding up their end of the bargain? So it's like the lead singer is in a fight with everybody. Nice. And it's all an act. It's all done for fun. But like, if you paid attention to what the different members of the band were doing in between songs, like everyone's doing little things that plays into this ongoing feud that's going on.
That's nice.
And then of course, every song he would introduce by saying, this next song is a cover. I mean, they're all covers. So anyway, I guess long story short is, if you get a chance to see Me First in the Gimme Gimmes live, and you like power pop / punk styles, and you love cover songs, go check them out. They are incredibly entertaining.
I love Me First in the Gimme Gimmes. I'm sad I didn't get to go. I'm delighted you did. And I'm delighted it was a great show. Because, you know, some artists are so produced that when you go see a live show, it just doesn't quite hold up to the studio production. And that's not me judging. A live show is a very different creature. It's like doing a stage, like acting on stage versus acting in film. And one, you have to do it over and over till you get it perfect. And the other, you have to do it right the first time or just move on. I certainly have yet to play a 100% perfect show as a musician. But yeah, I'm glad to hear that they hold up.
Yeah. Fantastic. I have other things to say about the, one of the other bands that appeared on that bill, but I'll tell you after the show, because this is a place for positivity.
That sounds good. Somebody I know is like super positive all the time. Well, not all the time, like 75% of the time. And that person is Mario.
You're teeing me up.
I'm teeing you up. I couldn't tell if you were frozen or if you were just giving me a look.
Not giving you a look. We're going straight into 30 seconds or less. And this was Ariel's way of reminding me that I'm going first, because just before we started recording, we made a last minute lineup change.
Yeah, so there was a rumor about a Kingdom Hearts thing but there's not enough there. Right. It's all like, well, this person thinks that this lines up with this and that and that. And so, well, now I've spent 30 seconds on it anyhow, but whatever.
But the important thing is that we didn't want to go through and present it as if it's a news item when really it's just a bunch of, you know, speculation.
Yeah.
And maybe next week we'll have more information and it will be a 30 seconds or less. But today's first 30 seconds or less is, and I'm going to start the music now, Universal Studios unveiled some new details about the Mario-themed land in the upcoming Epic Universe Park. They include a ride based off Mario Kart, an experience called Yoshi's Adventure, modeled after a similar ride in Japan, an entire section inspired by Donkey Kong Country, including a ride called Minecart Madness, and more. The concept video looks really cool, so here's hoping the real thing lives up to the hype.
I agree. I've only heard good stuff from the Japan thing. words, they work. But sadly, movie release dates don't always. So Kraven the Hunter, that movie that we have all been looking forward to since the release of Morbius and the re-release of Morbius and the re-release of Morbius.
And also Madam Web.
And Madam Web has changed dates. It was originally going to come out over Labor Day weekend, and now it's coming out on December 13th. I take umbrage with that because the movie that was going to come out on December 13th was Cobra Kai, and that has been moved to May of 2025. I have no issue with the Cobra Kai movie really working to make sure they put out a really great story, but I like to see like a movie that's just come out on my birthday, and Kraven the Hunter is not one of those.
Yeah, you've already made me see two Hobbit movies on your birthday.
I didn't make you see the third, sir.
No, but that's like 6 hours of my life I'm never getting back. Okay.
I'm sorry.
No, it's fine. Have you been waiting for another go at a live-action adaptation of He-Man and the Masters of the Universe? Well, hold on to your loincloths, because Amazon, MGM Studios, and Mattel Films are planning just such a thing for the summer of 2026. The story reportedly revolves around young Prince Adam being stranded on Earth for 10 years before returning to Eternia to battle the evil Skeletor. The writer of Kubo and the Two Strings, Chris Butler, is penning the script, which is banana, y'all.
Yeah, but
just one banana.
Have you ever asked yourself, why is Paul Rudd not in more musical movies? Well, don't worry, now he is. Paul Rudd and Nick Jonas are going to be in a new musical comedy called Power Ballad. All we know is it's a uplifting music-driven story about a wedding singer and a rock star that are divided by a song. Interestingly, the person who is doing it is John Carney, who has done a bunch of other stuff, but I know him most from the movie Once, which I wouldn't call a comedy. That was kind of a sad story, but it had brilliant music. So,
yeah. One of my favorite songs from any musical is from Once, and it's called Gold. And if you haven't heard it, go check it out. It's such a dramatic moment in the stage musical in particular. The movie musical is also fantastic, by the way, but the stage musical, that particular song has like just a, it's one of those moments where if music means anything to you, it really is going to hit hard.
Yeah.
Sorry for 30 seconds or less fans out there. Okay, great. Here we go.
Okay.
All right. Chris Hemsworth feels that maybe, just maybe, he might have gone a little too broad and goofy with Thor in Thor Love and Thunder. He told this to Vanity Fair while he was promoting the film Furiosa, in which he appears as a dude who drives a chariot pulled by motorcycles. So, you know, he's the model of restraint today. Anyway, he said he felt like the other Marvel actors got cooler stuff to say, a statement that RDJ later refuted, saying that Thor was always the coolest. So there's a lot of, like, envy going on among the Avengers.
I mean, we all know that the gods envy each other if you're in any multi-god pantheon.
This is true.
Have you ever said, man, I love EVE Online, but I wish there were more spreadsheets in QuickBooks? Well, now you've got another video game that you can play on Office software. Someone has created a Fallout-inspired game in Excel. You can play it at work, you can do mapping, and you can fight people, characters that you encounter along the way. The creator, oh my gosh, what's his name? I gotta do this fast. Dynamic Pair has a tutorial on his website about how to play it. Links will be on our website, www.lodgingerdrawncollider.com, if you want to check it out.
Remind me to circle back to that after 30 seconds or less. Here we go. Comics writer Jason Aaron is launching a new series about your favorite heroes in a half shell, the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. The plan is for the series to return to the roots of the original comic, which means a series that's a bit darker and grittier than most recent versions of the four turtles. The original TMNT served as a kind of satire of street-level superheroes like Daredevil, so this definitely has my attention. The comic launches this July.
Getting large holiday lawn ornaments is not just relegated to the calendar holidays, the normal ones, like the pre-movie ones. Now it is also for May the 4th. You know, everybody has May the 4th deals for Star Wars, but now Home Depot is releasing a 7-foot tall Darth Vader figurine with sounds and lights, and he also comes with accessories like a Death Star pumpkin and a silver ornament, maybe also a Death Star, for Halloween and Christmas, so you can keep them out all year long and just dress them up for the different holidays. I kind of prefer this over like the 10-foot tall skeletons that stay out all year round. His price point's pretty decent for this kind of thing too. It's $300.
How do you get him home? I guess
you order on the website and they ship him to you.
Okay. I was going to say, if you've got a car with a sunroof, I guess, but
yeah. So I'm sure also like he probably disassembles at the waist and plugs in, but yeah, it goes on sale on May 4th on the Home Depot website, which is where you can get it.
Yeah. Well, if you're like me, you often will sneak a peek at a film's Rotten Tomatoes score before deciding if you're going to take the time to venture out to the cinema to catch a flick. Google has changed how it displays those scores when you search film titles. So instead of showing you the critics' scores, which are often a bit more harsh, general search results will show you the audience score for that movie. So if you trust audiences more than critics, good news. But if you're like me, then I will not see you in the theaters.
You trust critics more than audiences?
Abso-frickin-lutely I do. Oh my gosh. There are movies where I'm like looking at the critics' responses. And remember, like a low score in Rotten Tomatoes doesn't mean that it's the worst movie ever made. It means that more critics gave it a negative review than a positive review. So while like a 15% score might seem like, oh, this has got to be the worst movie ever, or it's definitely worse than this movie that's got a 40% score, that's not necessarily true. It's probably true, but not necessarily true. But I tend to side with critics. When the audience score is like 85% and the critic score is like 35%, I'm usually closer to the 35 than the 85.
Interesting. I'm usually closer to the 85. But we know that based on the fact that I own Dylan Dog, Dead of Night, and Van Helsing. Jonathan's movie choices are sometimes questionable because he likes this movie called Mandy that was directed, he's going to kill me, by Panos Cosmatos, who is now doing an 80s vampire movie starring Kristen Stewart and Oscar Isaac, who play a married couple who venture down out of their penthouse and then get sucked into a world of like drugs and intrigue and sexiness. It's such an interesting cast for an interesting director for, you know, I guess what is the renaissance of vampire movies? Not that they've ever gone away, but we've gotten a lot of them in the past couple of years.
Yeah, that Kristen Stewart, she's really going someplace. I'm glad she's branching out to doing vampire movies now. I love Mandy. I love the Barry Manilow song Mandy. I love the film Mandy. I love our friend Mandy.
I love our friend Mandy, and I like the Barry Manilow song too. I've actually never seen the movie, understandably.
Yeah, I love our friend whose Renaissance Festival character was called Mandy. So Mandy, yeah, very weird movie, visually stunning film. So it really looks like kind of like 80s metal album covers. And like as in heavy metal album covers, there's a lot of imagery that kind of falls into that. I think Mandy is a truly bonkers, amazing horror / thriller film. And it is filled with magical realism and very strange. And I think it's great. So I'm definitely looking forward to seeing an 80s vampire movie from the same director. It's got my attention.
If it's not, so Mandy's super gory, right?
There's definitely gore in it. I mean, I wouldn't call it super gory, but then you also, we were just talking about Fallout.
So. Yeah, I didn't think Fallout was super gory, but I saw the trailer for Mandy when I watched Nick Cage's Color Out of Space, and that looked like it would be too much for me.
There's definitely violence in Mandy. A lot of it. And I mean, there's a chainsaw fight in Mandy. It's amazing. If you're not into violence, I don't think it's super gory, but then I also watch a lot of stuff that does have a lot of gore in it. Like I watch a lot of zombie movies and those have lots of gore in them.
It is interesting. I think it depends on the story and the application, you know, mm-hmm. Like I said, Fallout has some very gory moments, but overall, it didn't feel like every moment was gory to me. Dirty, yeah. Yes.
Well, and I don't know that it would be your cup of tea, like the Mandy. It's a really interesting movie. It's not like, I wouldn't call it an actor's film. It's not like you're going to get anything from it from like necessarily an actor standpoint, but from cinematography, director, kind of choices, that sort of stuff. I think it's fascinating. And the performances are good, but a lot of the performances are really more free of dialogue. So it's more like how characters hold themselves and the look on their face and that sort of stuff. Nick Cage does have a total freak out moment, which is understandable if you know what the movie's about. But there's a total freak out moment in a bathroom where he really goes full Nick Cage. But I don't know. I really like that movie. I've only seen it all the way through once, because it's also the kind of movie where you can really appreciate it and not necessarily revisit it. Not to say that I will never go back and watch it again. I probably will, but it's not something that like I get an itch and think, oh, I need to watch Mandy again.
Yeah. I mean, I felt that way about the first Cloverfield movie. I have seen it more than once because we showed it to other people, but it was one of those ones where like, this is really good, but it also very much affected me. And I was like, I don't need to be affected that way again.
Yeah. But if we're talking about Cloverfield movies, I don't know that I'll ever need to watch Cloverfield. I like Cloverfield, but I don't know if I ever want to watch it again. 10 Cloverfield Lane, totally different story. That's brilliant.
I'll watch it. I've watched it multiple times. I will continue to watch it.
John Goodman is so scary in that movie.
Yeah, but it's kind of more of a psychological thriller than...
Yes, for almost... No spoilers, but for almost the entire movie, it's more of a psychological thriller.
Yeah, yeah. I haven't seen the final Cloverfield piece in the trilogy, but I did like the first two. Yeah. We've gone way off topic. So what did you want to say about Fallout?
Really it was actually more about Excel, because I was curious, based upon what I know about you, Ariel, and I feel like I know you fairly well since our friendship does stretch back two decades, I'm curious, have you ever played any kind of computer game where you either were tempted to make like a spreadsheet in order to help maximize your game, you know, performance or whatever, or it was a game that people had done that and you use some of that to help you? Because I have.
I have certainly written down on like a piece of paper or on a notepad thing, like do this and do this and do this, if it's like a puzzle game. And
sure.
I keep failing.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think that's about as close as I've gotten, unless you consider like building this podcast a game, in which case all the time.
Yeah. yeah. I was thinking about games like Stardew Valley or Animal Crossing or something like that, where you've got like choices to make about what crops am I going to grow? And you are trying to min max, like how much am I spending versus how much do I make by selling the thing that I cultivate. Like Stardew Valley was that for me thank goodness the wiki now is so well built out, because it's much easier to reference that and just see like a breakdown of what all the different items are at all the different levels of quality. And then you can make your decision about what you want to pursue, because it's the worst feeling to be like, am I leaving money on the table because I've chosen to grow melons, which take 12 days to mature, as opposed to parsnips, which take 4 days to mature? Don't at me, y'all. I know that parsnips you grow in spring and melons you grow in summer. I know already. You don't need to tell. That's just a hypothetical I gave.
No, absolutely not. I do logistics as part of my day job. I'm good at it, but I don't find... Let me phrase this in a good way in case anybody who I work with listens. I enjoy doing logistics for the purpose of making somebody's else's life better and easier. And that is 100% the truth. But in my games, I am not a rules girly. I am not a logistics girly. If I have to get into that, I lose interest in the game very quickly. Even in like LARPing and tabletop, while I did enjoy like 3.5 D&D, you know, I didn't enjoy all the math behind it. I guess the closest that I've gotten to is like building a LARP character where I keep track of all the amounts of my point expenditures for my starting build to make sure that I have enough. But you're not a
min max kind of player.
I'm not a min max kind of player. And if I am, it's gotta be organic. Like, I mean, I've played characters where I'm like, I'm going to go all the way down this skill tree.
Yeah.
Again, LARPing and stuff. But yeah, no, I'm not a min maxer most of the time.
Yeah. Same here. Like, I remember when I was younger, I was more of that min max mentality because I looked at games as something you were to win. Right. But especially mm-hmm. with role-playing games, the more I got into it, the more I realized that I found more enjoyment in the storytelling aspect rather than the, you know, you roll a die and you succeed aspect. And I don't want to yuck anyone's yum. If you are more of the min-max kind of player, there's a place for that. There's nothing wrong with that. I mean, it is a challenge to make sure you're in a group where your playstyle is compatible and you're not going to have any rough points, but mm-hmm. there's nothing wrong with min-maxing. And in fact, you can mix min-max players with people who are more role-play focused players. There's nothing wrong with that either. It does take a really good game master to incorporate all of that properly. But I have gotten to the point now where I'm much more in favor of the storytelling aspects rather than the my character has 18.00 strength, so I can swing the sword real hard.
Well, let me tell you, even like in Calamity, where I did get all the way down, like my character's main build was like shooting, and then you had like your build, and then you had your stat behind it, so stamina, and then or dexterity rather, and then like charisma and charming. I started off the game as a character who had a high build in one of those, changed their life, and was starting over in a completely different build tree. So I had all the history, but none of the skills and none of the points in it. And then I spread all of my skills out like way further than I could get into the rules, but I'm going to spare you all, way further than was suggested. So by the end of the game, my overall build, I didn't hit as high of caps as other people because I had spread it out at the beginning to reflect someone who was having to live on their own and had to get like basic survival skills and basic fighting skills and basic shooting skills and basic chart, and like kind of had to just all these little things you'd pick up if you're having to survive on your own and having to fill all these gaps by yourself. And it also meant like there was a perk system, and I got very few perks because I never looked at it to go, oh, I need to get this and this and this to get this. I just kind of played organically. I did get pretty high in some stuff because I didn't miss, I think, any. I didn't miss most of the games. I was going to say something else about this, and I don't remember at all.
That's fair. Yeah. That's fair. I honestly like your approach, though, because I think that makes total sense for the character you were building. Like creating a survivalist, by definition, you need to have a base level of understanding and proficiency, or else you don't survive, as opposed to someone who perhaps is part of a community where those kinds of things can be specialized in so that you can go deeper, but you don't need to know how to do everything because, you know, build down the street does that for you, that kind of stuff. It makes total sense. So I think, like, for people who are dedicated to role-playing, that kind of approach it's really logical and it fits well with the character. And yeah, it might mean that you don't get that magical ability to snipe from an invisible vantage point and take out six people who happen to be standing in a row in front of you. But your character makes sense. The interactions you have are meaningful. And you're telling a story that holds up, as opposed to, you know, some Mary Sue character who's just really good at the thing that, you know, they've focused on.
Which means I'm bad at like collaborative card deck building games. I'm not as great at, or strategy games, because I don't do that spreadsheet logistics stuff as much.
Sure.
Although I am even worse than a min-maxer as a player. Not to say min-maxers are bad, but I have been berated by important people in the gaming industry for my game style play, which is attack at the beginning when everybody's weak. So even though you know you're not going to get strong, everybody else is brought down to your level. Like, I'm the person in Settlers of Catan who moves the thief to the most prosperous place in the first round. And yes, Stephen Steptoe did shame me for that on a Joko cruise when he was still alive. So I've tried to be a little bit nicer in my starting gameplay, but that's like just hit out the gate. I know it's bad. I'm better to play with now, people. I promise.
I mean, don't ever play. I can run games and I can play role-playing games. So this doesn't apply for those. But if for any competitive game, don't play me. Don't invite me to your game. Don't include. Ariel can speak from experience. She's seen it happen. I often will adopt the philosophy of, I don't have to win. I just have to make sure you lose. And it is unpleasant, and I acknowledge that. And I also wish I would change, but but despite all efforts, it hasn't happened in 48 years of my life. And I have a niece who appears to have inherited the same kind of competitive nature and petty nature that I have.
Enjoy it when you're doing it, though?
That's such a weird question for me to contemplate, because at the time it just feels like it's the only thing I can do.
Gotcha.
I mean, like, I've also been put into some situations, some crappy situations where I was put at a distinct disadvantage while being introduced to a game, and it soured me on the game, right? Gotcha. It's not necessarily the game's fault, but like there was an apples to apples session. I don't know if you were there, Ariel. But I remember getting so angry because I felt I had played the absolute perfect card.
Yeah, I think I was there. And somebody else picked something that was completely more random because it tickled their funny bone.
Yes. And I was like, screw this game. It doesn't make sense. I can't necessarily read everybody's mind to know what little absurd thing is going to delight them. That's not a fun game for me. I'm out of here.
Gotcha. So I'll never invite you to any of those kind of games. Maybe this is why we're such good friends, is because we're both super like competitive.
Yeah, it's possible. Like recognizing that in myself means that like I love cooperative games, because then we're all working together to create, you know, achieve some sort of goal. And it doesn't engage that part of my brain that gets real vindictive and evil, unless it's like Betrayal at the House on the Hill or a game like that, where it's cooperative up to a point and then it becomes competitive, then it can be touch and go. So, gotcha. That's why I just was curious. Because when I heard about a game that's being played within an Excel sheet, I was thinking, you know, there have been games in the past I've played where I was tempted to create an Excel sheet. The other examples are ones where they're collectibles and you need to keep track of which collectibles you've come across and which ones you still need. And Assassin's Creed is like the worst about this, but you know, if you don't keep track, then at the end of the game, it'll be like, oh, you're missing three of these things, but you don't know which three or where they might be. And then you're like, well, does that mean I have to go through like a guide and check every single location of these 200 feathers or whatever to find the three that I'm missing? Like, it just drives me nuts.
I have to apologize, Jonathan. I just burped and I thought I had muted my mic, but apparently it didn't.
No, I'll catch it in the edit. It's fine. The listeners, the listeners won't even hear it.
I don't even know if it was loud enough, but I'm eating some crow right now.
Well, that's what's making you burp.
Yeah, I know. This is game. It's gamey.
exactly.
Gamey. Yeah. Not intentional.
But we have news items, right?
We do. And we've talked for a very long time already.
It's funny because we looked at the lineup, and as always, we look at the lineup and say, well, this is going to be a short episode. But because it's us,
we're long-winded. Yeah, so the first thing we're going to talk about is something, I don't know, that's falling into like the Velma category of maybe doesn't look as bad as the first one, which is the Mufasa the Lion King prequel.
Wait,
it's called Mufasa colon the Lion King.
Ariel, you're saying the Lion King was bad? I thought that cartoon was great.
The cartoon was. The cartoon was fabulous. Amazing music. It fell into the era of cartoon movies where Disney was still doing like just brilliant soundtracks. No, the live action Lion King.
The quote unquote live action Lion King, the CGI Lion King.
The CGI re-release of Lion King that happened in the last 10 years.
Yeah.
Is having a prequel, Mufasa, the Lion King, about Mufasa being born into nothing and kind of becoming the king. Not kind of, he becomes the king.
yeah, which is interesting, but that it's a story about a lion who came from like humble beginnings who then rises to become king. Because I had always worked
under Aladdin.
Yes. But also I worked under the assumption, or I was under the assumption, that Mufasa was like the latest in a line of kings.
Same.
Because otherwise it starts raising questions about why is Simba being looked at as the next king if we just have an example of someone establishing himself as king and it's not through a hereditary line.
Yeah.
Why does Scar have to appear to you know, like, well, kill from Mufasa? Obviously he has to kill Mufasa in order to become king, but why does he have to scare Simba off?
So maybe I misunderstood the teaser trailer, and maybe Mufasa just thinks that he comes from nothing, but he is.
Rafiki says, essentially, that he came from nothing. Like, Rafiki's opening narration in the teaser, like, he says what you were saying.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, but Disney has been reimagining a lot of characters' history, you know this, for a while now.
That's true. Maleficent.
And Cruella and...
Yeah, all the villains.
But Mufasa's not a villain.
Well, you live long enough and he just didn't get the chance.
Well, I mean, but to be fair, if he came from nothing and put into a system of like you're born into power as opposed to into elected into power, then maybe he really was a villain.
Yeah, yeah. I guess...
Which I hate to say because I love Lion King and he's a good guy.
I guess I'm being super harsh. I thought this trailer looked fine. I am still not a fan of the CGI approach. I would much prefer a hand animated version of this story to CGI animation.
I also am not a fan of the CGI animation, and this is kind of something that I heard other people say as well, is like, if you're going for photorealism, you don't get the expressions that bring across the emotion that you're getting from these animals, because animals don't express emote the same way that people do. This trailer looked like they inched a little bit more into cartoony expressions to get some more emotion across. So it played a little bit better, but it's just a teaser. So we'll see.
Yeah. I don't know that I'll go. I never saw the CGI Lion King. I just didn't feel the need to. And when I heard some of the interpretations of some of the songs that I also loved from the animated one, that kind of reinforced my decision not to see it because I didn't like the new arrangements that much. Mm-hmm. I don't mean to be the grouchy old guy who's like, it was better the way they did it before. I don't necessarily believe that. I just prefer the original versions of those songs to the ones that were rearranged and remade for the CGI remake. So I know that people are also always on Disney about going back to the well over and over again in order to do their next projects, where whether it's a remake or it's like a prequel or a sequel, and that this is a big, like, they're talking about like creative bankruptcy with the company. In fact, the director of the film had to deal with people saying like, you're part of a soulless machine that's just generating content. And he said, the Lion King is a phenomenal story that introduced kids to like Shakespeare for the first time, because it's essentially a retelling of Hamlet, and that, like, how can you call that soulless? So it was an interesting debate. But on the flip side, if you do make that argument about like why don't you do more original stuff? Then you see some of their attempts at original or semi-original ideas that have fallen flat in recent years, which I would argue don't have that much to do with the fact that it wasn't a recognizable IP, but more that it just wasn't a very good story. But like,
well, Encanto Wish, for example, did super well.
What's that?
But Encanto did super well.
Encanto did great well. I think what was the one with the red panda? Was it Turning Red?
Turning Red.
Yeah, that I thought was great. I thought it was a fantastic original idea. But then there are other ones. I love
that they're incorporating the characters from that into the Disney theme parks.
Yeah. But then there's the other one. What was it? Strange Worlds that ended up flopping? Something like that?
Something like that, yeah. Or Strange New Worlds. Or
One of those is a Star Trek series.
Strange World.
Okay. I still haven't seen that and I've heard it's great, but like a lot of people, I just never went to see it. So yeah, Disney's kind of in a tricky situation. Like, do you lean on your established IP and risk the fans saying you don't have any new ideas, or do you go with new ideas, but no one goes to see it? And maybe that was a marketing issue. I would argue it was, because I don't remember seeing any marketing stuff for it until I saw a movie poster at a theater and was like, what's this? And then you told me we had covered it on LNC, and I was like, I have no memory of that.
Yeah. A lot of things are coming out without great marketing and kind of failing. Like Lockwood & Co. came out with little marketing and then kind of didn't succeed. Mm-hmm. There are rumors that Dead Boy Detectives isn't doing super well. There's rumors from What's on Netflix, which is one outlet, saying that they didn't perform well enough to get a second season. But some other places are like, they were in the top 10 for 3 weeks. That's great. So I don't know.
I do need to see that series though. Now that you've mentioned it, I need to watch it.
Yeah. If you want Dead Boy Detectives to be a thing, or you're interested in watching it and maybe getting second season, you should do that sooner rather than later, because those metrics count. It came out recently. It kind of came out, like, we saw the trailers and then it just kind of came out without any applause. And so I forgot that it came out, basically.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, that means that Netflix is also like riding the line between how much original do we do and how much redos do we do. And that brings us to like our next story, which is they are apparently doing a Scooby-Doo live action series.
Yeah. Now, of course, we got some live action Scooby-Doo films. Did you ever watch those?
I've seen bits and pieces.
Yeah, same here. The bits and pieces I saw looked like they were very kind of clever. Like, it made me think of not quite as over the top and campy as the Brady Bunch movie, but kind of in that same vein of, we're going to acknowledge the silly parts of this show and this series, and we're going to not deny it. We're going to lean into that a little bit without going too over the top. Like, there were obviously some jokes about perhaps Velma's preferences, but nothing that was, you know, over the top and objectionable, I think. So interesting to see this. I'm wondering how this is going to come across. The folks who are behind it, we talked about them recently. It's the people behind Cowboy Bebop. So
Cowboy Bebop behind Dead Boy Detectives.
Yeah.
So I guess maybe it's not doing so bad. And also The Chilling Adventures of Sabrina, which I watched and it frustrated me and was too dark for me, but a lot of people really loved it.
Yeah. A friend of the show, Shay Lee, was also frustrated by it. So you are not alone.
Probably for different reasons, I'm going to say, but
you're just saying that because our friend Shay is a witch.
I mean, maybe some of the same reasons. There was a lot of it that came across very campy. I'm not a witch, but I was about to quote Princess Bride.
I was so ready. I was so ready. You never had it so good. Yeah. So yeah, the fact that there's going to be another live action, it's interesting because, of course, we also still have the Velma series going on over at Max. So clearly there's still interest in the Scooby-Doo property. I am hopeful that whatever the live action series ends up being, it ends up being less mean-spirited than Velma is.
I hope so too.
Yeah. I don't mind it being campy and fun and perhaps a little like tongue in cheek and wink, wink at the audience. Just don't make it mean.
Yeah. Yeah. But some things are definitely looking up. Like the trailer for season 2 of My Adventures with Superman just looks delightful.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's fun to see Superman acting like a hero.
Yeah. Yeah. Especially where like that article came out about Zack Snyder, who was like, well, he was going to do all this bad stuff and then die and then come back and then be a good guy at the end. But it was going to be like all dark, 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 dark until then. So yeah, it's really nice to see Superman.
Yeah. I remember Ariel sent that article to me with like an oof or whatever. And I still haven't read it, but I remember looking at the headline and thinking, there's like an 80% chance, at least maybe 90% chance, that I'm going to read this and just go, well, thank goodness that didn't happen, because what you did, Zack Snyder, already did so much damage to the idea of Superman. So you have essentially confirmed my suspicions.
And I say that as someone who have said it before. I liked Man of Steel as a movie. I thought it was a good and entertaining movie. It wasn't a great Superman origin story. But this trailer for My Adventures with Superman, which is an animated series, looks delightful.
Yeah.
Like if Invincible was uplifting instead of horribly depressing.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Which I think it's fine for Invincible to be what it is and for this to be what it is. Like both things have a place in entertainment. But yeah,
I agree.
I don't know that maybe My Adventures with Superman might have been another one of those things that I did know about and then just subsequently totally forgot existed. Because when I saw this trailer at first, I was like, oh, this is a season 2. This thing's already been going for a while. And then I watched it and I thought, I think I might need to dedicate some time to catching up and watching this because it looks like the sort of thing that I would find really entertaining.
Yes. So I think... I'm trying to remember who the voice of Superman is in this. Jack Quaid is Superman.
Oh, so I from know the Boys.
That, yeah, and from Lower Decks and a bunch of other stuff. This did come across my radar, but so there are a lot of like DC animated things that come out all the time across various platforms, and there have been maybe less across various platforms now, but. It really takes something to like hit me as this is worth talking about.
Yeah.
As opposed to, oh yeah, we're just getting another Superman show. And I wish I had looked more into it because yeah, I watched the trailer for season 2 and I'm like, I want to watch this.
Yeah.
I want something that is fun and entertaining and has good story and I feel good at the end of it. This is why I started watching Dragon Ball Z. It's because there's a lot of stuff out there that just is like, there are many shows that I want to watch, but some of them I really need brain power for, or I need like emotional bandwidth to watch because I'm just stressed or tired or whatever. And I lean on things that are funny or happy. This is why I have I'll probably keep Paramount Plus even after I'm done with like all the Star Trek stuff. It's because I watch after midnight when there's nothing else to watch because it makes me laugh.
yeah. Yeah.
This looks really good.
Yeah, I'm 100% on the same page as you. Like, same reasoning, too, that even when I know something is really highly regarded, if it is so dark or just filled with unlikable characters, even if it's very well done, it can be a big hurdle for me to get over and give time to it. Because, like you, I'm like... Yeah. The real world is so stressful. The day-to-day news and stuff, like if you're keeping informed with things, you might be stressed out. And I just need not like meaningless popcorn entertainment, but uplifting entertainment. I need hope. I was talking to a friend of mine the other day where hope is a really important thing for me in my entertainment, which is why I can't watch stuff like Walking Dead. Right. Because I feel like there's no hope in those shows. It's all just how do we survive another day? But there's no hope associated with it. It's just an attempt to avoid death. And that's not enough for me. I need hope. It's also why I couldn't watch Game of Thrones.
Yeah. It's why I don't like Children of Men is because that movie has no hope, whatever.
No, it has a hopeful ending. That ending is hopeful.
It does not.
It does.
Those people that are coming after the main characters at the end are going to kill them.
They're not going to catch them.
It leaves it up to interpretation.
They're not going to catch them. And I choose to interpret that they get away.
I'm not the only person who finds that movie hopeless, so it's very divisive. I didn't enjoy it, but that's okay. If you did, that's great. My adventures with Superman, I'm sure, will not be the same experience.
No, I don't think we're going to.
I also suspect...
I would, if my Adventures of Superman season 2 ends, like, and you're like, this is just like Children of Men, something has gone terribly wrong.
I also suspect I'll leave, I am going to see this next movie that you put into our lineup, The Glass Worker.
Yeah.
I suspect that will also make me feel more good than sad.
Yeah.
Or I hope at least.
It's an animated film. It's an anime film. And it looks really pretty. And it's the trailer that we got just looks nice. There's clearly like an epic storyline going on, or that the story we're watching is set against an epic wartime story, but in this somewhat fantastical world. And they don't go overboard with the fantasy elements either. It's like there is that part in it, but it isn't like everything is magical and surrounded with fairies all the time. I really liked it. I thought it was a kind of wistful.
Yeah. Yeah. It's got like the story pace has like a very Miyazaki mm-hmm. feel, mm-hmm. but it's not, it's by Mano Animation Studios, which is Pakistan's first studio specializing in hand-drawn animation. It's coming out in Pakistan in July. I'm hoping it's also coming out here.
Yeah.
Yeah. I haven't looked into it that far yet.
The trailer is really impressive. I mean, if that's like a first effort type thing, that's amazing.
It's beautiful. It gives me like vaguely like Anastasia vibes too.
Yeah. Yeah. I was getting like Howl's Moving Castle, like you said, Miyazaki.
Yes.
It was giving me that kind of feel.
Yeah, yeah. Definitely planning on seeing it if I'm able to see it. You should definitely check out the trailer. You can YouTube, Google it, or it'll be on our website. Mm-hmm. No, I was just going to ask if you've watched any of Cobra Kai yet.
Define any. Do you mean like...
More than just a trailer.
I've watched more than just a trailer. I have not seen an episode all the way through. But I've seen clips.
Just give up or
no, I've just seen compilations of stuff and all the compilations I saw looked fine. But I think part of the problem is that compilations show you interesting moments, but they're completely out of context. So I didn't really get attached to any of the characters I was watching. There was a point where I would be like, I'd look up a character just to be like, what is this person's deal? Why are they such a jerk? Like that kind of stuff. Like, I just don't know. I haven't watched the show. I could watch the show and answer these questions, but that's too much work. Let me go to a wiki. Well,
I mean, I think it's a good show. I think you should give New Girl a shot first. Cobra Kai is very good. I think you would really enjoy New Girl once you got past like the first couple of episodes. Because, you know, everything takes a little bit to get on their role and their group.
Ariel's mission in 2024 is to get me to watch New Girl.
I you just need to give it a shot. Maybe I will get some episodes that you need to watch, but they won't be as funny out of context. But Cobra Kai is one of those shows that I love watching, and yet I am constantly infuriated at the adults being so dumb and petty. Not all of the adults, just the main adults.
Yeah.
They're like, their spouses are fine.
Well, I mean, like,
and then like the kids be, oh, I get so frustrated. But I love it.
Well, I mean, like Johnny, obviously, like that's like the whole concept, at least of the first season, is that it's largely his journey and how messed up he was as, you know, essentially a bully who was encouraged to be a bully by an authority figure, right? Like he already appeared to be somewhat of a bully. And then you learn more about his, like, again, I know this from just osmosis, but you know, you learn more about his background and like the things that kind of shaped him into the person he is, and how that's affecting his journey into the person he's going to be. And that was like, that was like the value proposition of that first season. And then obviously the introduction of the kids, they become more and more important to the story as it goes on, so that they become the focus, not him. But
I just think that there's some emotional intelligence lacking, obviously, between Danny and Johnny.
Yes.
Right. Like, Danny's a good guy, but he's not a great guy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Also kind of a butt.
I kind of like that, though. I kind of like that. Like, that's a risky decision to make, right? That you take the character who in a previous installment within this narrative world is portrayed as mostly the good guy protagonist who is truly wronged by the antagonists, and that while he might have his own foibles or whatever, he's genuinely a good person. For a subsequent series to say, let's take that character and say, maybe he's made some bad choices too. Maybe there are certain character traits that he's developed as he's gotten older that are not so positive. Like, that's a risky decision to make, but from what I understand, the show handles it pretty well.
I think so. I mean, mainly I get irritated because I'm like, you two are adults and you should try some problem solving first.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of bad blood. There's a lot of, like, you know, history between them. But, you know, there's a running joke on How I Met Your Mother with Barney Stinson, who is a very problematic character. But part of the joke is he thinks that Johnny is the good guy in the Karate Kid movies, and that Danny was being kind of a bully and a jerk. I agree that Danny's a little bit of a jerky kid. Even though Johnny was definitely a bully and physically aggressive, which I feel is worse.
Yeah. But
on a safety issue.
The whole reason we're bringing this up, because we buried the lead as far as you can possibly bury it, is that we know that the final season is going to be delivered in three sections.
AV Club released it, and also it's on YouTube. It's like a 50-second trailer, but it shows a lot of stuff. But yeah, we're getting the series in three parts, and the first five episodes come out in July. Which is not surprising, because like last month they were still looking for people,
right? Yeah, so it's actually crazy turnaround for post production to get it out by July.
Maybe in March,
but still, like, I mean,
they probably had like some in the bag already. So like, because of the strike, they might, I don't know this. This is just me postulating. Because of the strike, maybe they got the beginning done. And then, so those things have gone through more post-production so they can be released in July. Whereas like the later part of the story will still need work and will be released later.
Right. Yeah, no, that makes sense. I'm glad that they're going to be able to wrap up the series, and that it's not going to be one of those things where they're clearly planning on continuing the story, but then they get canceled and can't do it. Like, it's good to know where the finale is, right? That this is leading up to a satisfying conclusion one way or the other. Maybe not everyone will have their story wrapped up in a neat little bow, but we can be reasonably certain it's the story the showrunners wanted to tell.
Yeah. I think it's coming to a place where it's good to end it. I think otherwise you're going to start rehashing stuff and you won't have enough character growth. We have like three more stories. I know we're running long today, you guys. We're just now like hitting an hour. A little past. But we're getting a docuseries on Peacock about black cowboys inspired by the movie Nope. And I'm pretty excited about that.
I'm curious how many aliens are going to be in this docuseries about black cowboys.
I mean, it's a docuseries, so only if aliens were really in the Wild West.
Gosh. No, that's really cool, though. Like, to be able to tell a story that I think we can clearly say has been extremely underrepresented in any traditional history books, at least any that I have encountered, that's exciting. Like, obviously there have been attempts to tell stories that were involving more than just white dudes in the Old West, but it's a relatively recent effort to do that. And because, like, I think back to the movies I watched when I was younger, and a lot of the ones that set in the Old West, they pretended like white people were the only people who existed. And of course that wasn't true, but, you know, being able to have like an actual docuseries that covers these stories that maybe otherwise you never would have heard about, that is exciting.
Yeah. Yeah. And like, you know, it was kind of poked fun at in like Blazing Saddles. And then Michael Jai White just recently came out with a Western.
Yeah. It was like, like a Rudy Ray Moore movie. Black Dynamite.
Outlaw Johnny Black.
Oh, Outlaw Johnny Black. Black Dynamite was the other one that also.
Yeah.
Very, very much in the kind of blaxploitation mode of entertainment.
And there have been like a couple other shows that have focused on that recently, but you're right. It is definitely more of a modern thing. And I've noticed like on social media, and I'm obviously not the expert to talk about this, but I've seen creators of color talk about the fact that like talk about how underrepresented Black people are in the cowboy culture, because there are, have been a lot of people in that culture of color.
Yeah.
And they just get overlooked. So again, I'm not the expert to speak on that, but it is a really interesting thing to hear others that are talk about, and which is why I'm so excited about this docuseries.
Yeah, totally. I'll be really interested to check it out. Jordan Peele has kind of a mixed record for me now at this point, where I feel like some of the stuff he's put out has been among the most compelling storytelling I've ever seen. And then others like The Twilight Zone, less so. So here's hoping this falls in the first camp and not the second one. But again, I think he does take storytelling very seriously. So I'm sure the stories will be captivating.
Yeah, yeah. I liked some of the Twilight Zone. Some of it fell flat for me, but that's like the old Twilight Zone did that too. So
that's also true. Yeah, I mean, there are old episodes of the original Twilight Zone that are just straight up Westerns, which is wild to say.
Yep.
But there are, if you watch that first season of Twilight Zone. Anyway, next up we don't normally cover commercials unless it's the Superb Owl, but there was this one little ad I saw that I felt like I had to throw into our lineup, where it's for Apple and iPhones, and the ad follows a person dressed up in full Boba Fett bounty hunter armor using an app to locate his buddies at a Star Wars convention. And I thought it was cute. And I put it in here because I was like, this might be the most little entertaining few minutes of Star Wars I've seen in a while. Cause I haven't watched a lot. I just got so burnt out on Star Wars content that I don't typically watch it anymore, but this was cute. And I also thought it was funny. They have a song in it that, that references 501s. But they're talking specifically about the Levi's jeans, these kind of faded black jeans. But I thought it was so funny that they used 501s, because the 501st is the fan group that does the really elaborate Empire's cosplays. So yeah. I was like, did they do that? Did they pick that song specifically because it references 501s?
Probably. I realized watching it, I'm kind of like a little bit of a self-important geek, because I was like, how many of those people do I know? Are any of those the Mandalorians that I know locally? But I have no idea where they filmed that. And there are Amazing Mandalorian cosplay groups all over the States. And although I know that my friends who do it also travel. So
yeah,
that was really.
Yeah, it's a fun little ad. I mean, it did not make me want to go out and get an iPhone. Actually, I do like the idea of using an app that lets you close in specifically on someone's location. And at a science fiction convention, that would be 1,000,000,000% helpful.
So one, my Google Maps already lets me share location with people. So like I can see where some of my family members are at any time. This is especially helpful because I've got family that does travel a lot. Mm-hmm. Or like they would share their location when they'd go out like on their boat or whatever. That sounds very fancy, but it's not. and so just as a way of like, hey, we're traveling. So, and I do this too, like, hey, I'm on a road trip. I'm going to share my location with you. So, you know, if I disappear where I'm at, right?
True. But that's slightly different though, because this app, what it was really more about was guiding you to someone else's location, not just telling you where they were, but saying, this is the direction you need to go in. This is how far away they are from you, from where you are currently. So that way, you know, like, oh, I'm like 400 feet away. I'm going to need to walk a little bit before I can actually spot them.
Yeah, it's a little bit more granular. Now, mind you, I haven't tried the location sharing that I have when I'm close to the people I'm around. So I don't know how granular I could get, but like, I know I can zoom in and see exactly where they are and exactly where I am.
Also, you and I both know that if you are at a science fiction convention, the chances of you getting a solid connection are very low.
That's exactly what I was going to say.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, that's great. That looked not even as crowded as Dragon Con is, although it was crowded enough to make me feel claustrophobic in the commercial. In a beautiful way, but also in a way like I'm glad I'm not in that crowd. But yeah, it may not work. If you're at Dragon Con, it's 50% chance it won't work.
Yeah, those networks get overwhelmed so quickly. I mean, anyone out there who's ever been to any massive event where lots of people are on their devices, you know that the network will get overwhelmed, and then suddenly you're not able to even send a text message, let alone launch an app that gives you real-time updates on how close someone is.
Yeah. Okay, and we've got one more story to talk about, and I'm really sad we don't have a lot of time to talk about it now.
Yeah, we'll just go through this quick, which is that Airbnb, like every now and then they do these weird promotional things where they will create, the company will end up essentially commissioning a structure to either be built or converted to resemble like a famous one, or they'll actually get access to a building that was used for something famous and then do like a makeover on the building and then let people, you know, rent it out. And in this case, Airbnb's got a couple of interesting ones, including a house in Westchester, New York, that has been made up to look like the Professor X's school for the gifted in X-Men 97. And there's also a house that's been made to resemble, like every angle is made to resemble the house from Up. So much so that one, they're using a crane to lift the house up so that you're quote unquote flying through the air. And two, the first 10 minutes of you going to the house are really sad.
Yeah, I still haven't watched Up. Not gonna.
I know, also, that joke is lost on Ariel, but y'all out there who have watched Up, you think that was funny.
it's not lost on me. It's the reason I won't watch the movie. But I will say it looks beautiful and it's a really cool idea. I don't know how comfortable I am staying in a house that's being lifted by a crane.
Yeah. Can you just imagine being in a house like that, that has like, if you're in a group that has kids in it, because you know those kids would be running back and forth trying to get the house to start swinging. And yeah, I would be like just gripping onto furniture and I'd be like, I am busy pooping all the pants I brought on this on this trip. Not just the ones I'm wearing, the ones that are still packed up. I'm pooping those too.
Yeah, I'm sure it's safe. I'm sure they've had a lot of construction and engineers, whatever, look at it. But that's scary to me. You mentioned when we were talking about this before, when you brought it up to me as a conversation topic, that like the X-Men one gives you a tour with costume characters.
Oh yeah, I totally forgot about that. Yes, according to the article, part of the experience of renting out that location is that it's like a multi-hour guided tour with actors who are dressed up as X-Men. And I told Ariel, I'm like, this sounds like this feels weird to say as someone who has been a character at festivals, like a street character, and you're in character all day. You're not supposed to break character when you are quote unquote on stage. It feels weird to say this as someone who has done that. It feels so cringy. Like, I think I would hate every moment of being led around the X-Men mansion by Beast or whatever, and just be like thinking, I hope this experience ends soon.
So I get that. Like, if you have kids, it's amazing because you get the tour through the house. You get to learn where all the cool things are, right? Mm-hmm. There's also like a drink mixing, like a cocktail mixing class with Beast in his lab, which is super cool until you think about the costumes and which version of Beast is it and how much is he going to look like Beast?
How much blue fur are you going to end up in your cocktail?
Yeah. But I mean, like, for kids, probably amazing. I'm really enjoying X-Men 97. I'm also caught up on that. That's something I forgot to say I was watching. I'm really enjoying it. I think it's a great show and a great continuation. Very much. For kids, it's great. I made a joke that I'm like, or you could just be like that one creepy woman who's like, I want to stay in this house, but I only need this one X-Men to show me around. It's fine.
Yeah, she specifically said Gambit. So now we know that Ariel likes that Creole accent.
Gambit, Nightcrawler, and Beast.
Wow. I'm not going to spend any time dissecting any of that.
But reading the article, it's interesting because it looks like some of these experiences might be free and first come, first serve.
I don't know the details behind, actually, because that's the thing about these articles. Like, it ends up always being this big PR thing for Airbnb, but it's very rare that I actually see anything useful if you wanted to be someone who actually had a chance to stay in one of these places. And it does feel like it typically is extremely limited to the point where you start asking questions of what criteria do they use to choose the people who go? How many of these are friends of the executives of Airbnb? That kind of thing.
Yeah. I mean, it does say in the article that some of the experiences are free and the ones that aren't are going to be under like 100 per person. And it's first come, first serve. I'll do some more research to see if Airbnb has released anything about signing up for that, if listeners have interest in that. But it's also interesting to me because some of it's like, go to a concert with Doja Cat or go to Kevin Hart's nightclub and like exclusively hang out with him. And both of those are very busy people. So it's got to be like a limited time, like very specific dates too.
Yeah. Like you have to have it open in your schedule. It's not like it's going to be, hey, you know, August is wide open.
Yeah. But I mean, they've got a lot of cool experiences and they're all over the world. Like there's a gaming one in Spain, apparently.
Do they have one where it's have tea with Florence Pugh? Because that's all I really want.
No, but they have one where you go to a house that's all about gaming and you get like classes on playing Fortnite or something from a famous gamer who's not super into Fortnite, so.
Yeah, I was about to say that would probably be the most frustrating that experience for that person if I were the one to win that. They'd be like, yeah, you know what? Let's just put Tetris on for you, old man, and we're going to just call it a night, okay?
Yeah, yeah. So again, don't know if you have to pay to rent the Airbnb per normal and then just the bonuses are free or if it's out of the goodness of their heart and if you can get in, great. I'm guessing it's probably the former. But they say that the article that we'll post has all of the current experiences that they're planning on opening at the bottom of it. And then also they say that they will be adding more. I think it's a cool idea. Even if there's not one that's like, ooh, that's for me.
Yeah.
The X-Men house would totally be for me if I didn't have to get the multi-hour tour. just because I would feel socially awkward.
Which is so weird to think that you would feel socially, because again, both of us have been like characters who have stayed in character for ages. We understand what that gig is. And it's so fun. I mean, I totally feel the same way you do, but it is funny that that's our reaction.
Well, and I think it's because I've looked behind the mat, and like Disney has done it well. I've encountered characters there that have totally brought me into the story. Like when Commander Hux, General Hux, whatever, bombarded our drink time at Oga's Cantina. That was amazing. And it was very immersive and it didn't feel cheesy at all. We were just able to like lean into it. But if I'm paying to go somewhere specific and it's not a LARP and I'm not also an X-Men in character, then all of a sudden I'm worried about giving those actors what they need. Because I've been on the side where I'm like, I want to give the audience what they need. So I want to be a good audience member to make sure that it's getting cycled back to the actors. And that's where I become very self-aware.
Yeah, right. Because we've also had experiences with bad audiences, right? Like,
yeah.
Most of the audiences, thankfully, that I encountered, and I imagine it's the same for you, most of them have been, at worst, neutral, mostly good, sometimes great. Sometimes you have, like, a phenomenal interaction that just makes your day. On occasion, you run into bad, just outright bad audience experiences, and that certainly, as an actor, can really influence how you comport yourself when you're in a similar situation with someone else who's taking on that role. Like, I don't really have a desire to go back to the Renaissance Festival. There, I feel like there's not really enough for me to want to do to go back. But if I ever do, I'm always of the opinion that if I joke about it being bad bit, but I would never do that to anyone. I would always try to be the best audience member for a cast member that they ever had if they were to stop and interact with me. Sadly, the last few times I went, that wasn't really ever a possibility because I never saw a character while I walked around the entire festival.
Yeah. Yeah, we've talked about that before on this episode, or on this, not on this episode, but on this series quite a lot.
Yeah.
But, you know, I look forward to reading reviews about people who do this.
Yeah.
Because, again, I think it's a very cool idea. I think it's a super cool idea. And I hope that it is as accessible as I hope it is.
Yes.
For people.
Yes. And that's a good place for us to wrap this up because, again, was supposed to be a short episode and ends up being one of our longest ever.
Longest ever. Whoo boy, you're not kidding. Well, we don't have a mashup. Jonathan, do you want to tell them how to get in touch with us?
Yeah. So
or do you just want to skip it tonight?
No. No, they need to know. They need to know. So what you're going to have to do in order to get in touch with me and ask me your question is, I don't care if you have to move mountains. You've got to get a scheduled high tea with me and Florence Pugh. This has to happen. If you are Florence Pugh, this is going to be way easier. If you're not Florence Pugh, I recognize this is a challenge, but you need to arrange a high tea. And it has to be between me and Florence Pugh as we sit and drink tea and eat sandwiches and just chat about whatever it is we want to chat about. That is required. And once you do that, and once I'm done, you know, paying for it and leaving a tip, I'm not asking you to pay for it. I'm asking you to actually make it happen. Then you can ask me whatever the heck you want. It doesn't even have to be about the show. It can be anything, and I'll give you the answer.
Yeah, and if the closest you want to get to high tea with Florence Pugh is watching her do that with Lad Bible, then you can reach out to us on social media, on Facebook, which I don't know why that would be the closest you'd want to get to high tea with Florence Pugh. She seems really cool. But regardless, you can reach out to us on social media, on Facebook and Instagram and Discord and Threads. We are Large Nerdron Collider on Twitter/X. We are LNC_podcast. All of our show notes will be up on our website, www.largenerdroncollider.com. Hey, surprise, everybody. It's actually up to date, exception of this episode, if you're listening, probably, because it takes me a little bit to get it up after it airs. The Discord invite is also there, or you can email us at largenerdronpod@gmail.com. We love hearing from you. We love that you listen. Thank you for being a part of our geeky family. And until next time, I am Ariel. These balloons cannot hold me, Kasten.
And I am Jonathan. Florence Pugh, call me. Everyone else goes to voicemail. Strickland.
I go to voicemail?
Sorry. The Large Nerdron Collider was created by Ariel Kasten and produced, edited, published, deleted, undeleted, published again, cursed at, by Jonathan Strickland. Music by Kevin MacLeod of Incomptech.com.